This week, we're going to meet a man who was basically robbed from his childhood in school due to the fact that the school did not do anything to prevent his bullying. We'll get right into it after I hit this music. This week, we are joined by Daniel Moen. He's an actor and stuntman. And if you've seen the show on Netflix called Obliterated, he was the Russian guy that eventually got shot in the bar. Oh, Daniel, yes. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So Daniel, before we get into how you became an actor, voice actor, stuntman, tell us about what it was like growing up for you. Was it as adventurous as it is now as your life is?
Adventurous is one way to put it. It was tough. Depending on how much information I should share here, because I'm 6'7" now. I've always been the big kid, no matter where I was. And for better or worse, being the big kid also came with that sort of automatic, when I see people getting bullied, I'd want to step in and stop it. And in elementary school, when you're the big kid, you step in and you stop it and someone gets hurt. The school doesn't like that.
How old were you again?
Elementary school.
Oh, elementary school. Okay.
Like ages ago. But that's, for better or worse, that's where the whole story starts, is because there was, as a kid, you know, I'd step in, stop bullying when I saw it happening, but I'd get physical because the people would get physical first. The school I was at the time did not approve it, and they basically said, and this was at the 90s, so it was that time when stuff like this would happen, when the school would say, he cannot be here without being on medication of some sort. And so when I was 7 years old, they started me on medication that, to be blunt, how to explain it, and this might be TMI, this might be like, when I was 7 years old, they got me to a psychiatrist after stepping in, stopping bullying, and the other kid got hurt. And the first medication they put me on was one called Stelazine. For those not in the know, Stelazine is an antipsychotic they are hesitant to give to prisoners because it is known to cause permanent nervous system damage, amongst many other things. If you actually watch some of my earlier films or student films I'm in, you'll see my hand, like they'll do some weird thing like that. And that's, I'm not aware of that. That's a long-term side effect left over from that. So, that being the starting point, like, and the medications changed after time, and at age 25, I finally got off them, got into a healthier life. We'll get into that story when we get into that story. But that made my childhood and early years rough, and it was one of the big points I always got bullied on myself for, was because I'd be in that medical haze, there would be this, I wouldn't get that they were making fun of me, or I would, and I wouldn't be able to respond, or they'd just push me around.
I want to, before we go too far into it,
yeah,
I'm still trying to wrap my head around why you had to go on medication, because you stepped in to break up.
Stepped in to
break up. Being picked on.
Yeah, basically. It was a common event where I'd step in as someone else was being bullied. And again,
you've done this frequently, I take it.
Yeah.
You step in to help kids out.
Yeah. But one time, enough times that the school saw a pattern, the person I stepped in to stop from bullying would throw a punch and things would devolve from there. Because again, I'm still the big kid here. And so even though it's kids tussling, my push for them, like it wouldn't hurt them or maim them in a big way, but it would be just enough that they'd be able to go to the teacher and go, Dan, hit me. And it's always me getting the bad end of the stick.
And the bully got away from it. Bully got away.
Every time.
Like, what did the kid that you stuck up for back you up?
Rarely. And mind you, this is the times I can remember. It's been.
Yeah, I get it.
But sometimes they would, sometimes they'd run off. And that's what I knew. It was an instinctual thing for me, is just I knew my role was to step in and help them out. And whether they stuck around and helped out or played with, no one ever really played witness. When it came to like bully tales on the teachers, the bully victim, they were gone. They were nowhere. It was now Dan stepped in and hit this kid for reasons we don't understand. Not Dan stepped in, stopped someone being bullied, and it got twisted by the bully to make me look like I had hit them for no reason.
Okay, so you get on those meds, it causes you these like twitches, ticks.
Yeah. And
you're a super tall kid, which makes you a big target.
Oh, yes. And that's the funny thing is, you would think me being big, it would make some bullies stop. But for whatever reason, like, especially it got worse in middle school, continued into high school, they would keep bullying me, keep pressing all the buttons. And apparently the whole goal was to see like how far they could go with me before I hit them and then get me into further trouble.
It's called little dog syndrome. That's what I call it. Little dog syndrome.
Oh yeah.
Because I have a miniature dachshund named Gus, and he always picks on the big dogs.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. These big dogs could squash him. People have that as well. They see a big guy and they're like, you think it'd be the opposite.
Right.
They should be scared of you. They should leave you alone. But it's like, no, they're going to go for the challenge and pick on you.
Every time. And again, it was because I'd had so much going on in the background, it just gave them more ammo to work with. And since I'd be working with a social worker or the counselors at the school, I'd always be told, like, you know, don't react, don't do anything. Just come to us. I'd go to the teachers, they'd do nothing. And
yeah, that's still true today, unfortunately.
Ain't that the truth?
Their option was go to them. Maybe they meant go to the social worker. Because you just didn't do anything, who are you supposed to go to?
Right? Like, it was supposed to be just find a teacher, find someone of authority, which some of the schools, it was a security guard who would proceed to do nothing. Sometimes it was a teacher who would proceed to do nothing. Like, the only time things ever got changed or acknowledged was when they got escalated to the point where I had an emotional outburst and things happened.
Well, then, because now you're the crazy kid now.
Exactly. Exactly. I will note, right now, my life is drastically different. I've been off medication since I was about 25. And the main thing that got me off it was I lucked out and found a man by the name of Gary Choi, who he ran his own kung fu school. And I'd sort of become friends with him for a bit. At one point, things were going really bad in my life. And he says, you know, Dan, how about this? I'll help you get mentally and physically into shape. You just have to do everything I say. All right. I became a live-in student of the Kung Fu school. And starting out, it was rough. Like, starting out, I still had a lot of, like, the leftover tendencies of being admittedly a spoiled kid who was not fully mentally there. But it was the mixture of exercise and support from the Kung Fu family and a whole lot of regimentation. When class was on, I had to be there. There was one time, this is going to sound terrible for people who aren't in the martial arts way of life, but there was one time I tried to pretend like, oh man, I'm really tired, I'm going to nap through class. And my sifu comes downstairs to my room and just goes, Dan, class is on. Let's get you up there. Nah, man, I'm tired. At the time, I weighed 400 pounds. He literally grabs me, puts me on his shoulder, walks me up the stairs, and I'm just screaming, no, no! I get set down in horse stance, and he just goes, horse stance, until I'm happy. That sounds terrible to people who aren't, you know, used to, like, sometimes.
Wait, were you literally living in the Kung Fu studio?
Not in the studio, the house. The way we had it was, there was the school that we had set up in the garage, and we matted out, trained up, and then we had the house that was right next to it. So it was a two-level house. It was rough, but it was necessary. And, I mean, hell, look at me now. I'm acting, I'm doing stunts, I'm working my way up in the industry. I'm living on my well, technically on my own. I've got roommates, but there was a long time where my folks, as much as I love them, there was a long time where they were kind of convinced I was either going to live in a group home or under a bridge. And it wasn't because they had no faith in me or anything like that. It was more because the mental state that they had seen me in and everything else kind of left them there. Anyway, maybe that's a bit too much for an anti-bullying podcast.
No, but I'm curious though, going back to your school days.
Yeah.
7 years old, you get put on medications because you were trying to be the kid who stuck up for the little kids.
Yeah.
Being picked on. High school, life was pretty much the same for you. You just got picked on.
Picked on incessantly.
Nobody would help you out. There's no help because you were considered the odd kid or the kid with mental health problems.
Yeah.
Looking back at it now, how much would your issues be tied to bullying though? Like, did bullying start this whole thing?
Well, it started it. To put it into perspective, Monday through Friday of my week was basically a war zone. It was go to school, be bullied from period one till even getting off the bus, be told I couldn't react in any way. My weekends were sacred to me because those were the few moments of respite that I could finally just exist and be happy. If it hadn't been for, like, if my life had been with more people being more understanding, or if it hadn't been for bullying, or if it hadn't been for systems stepping in the way of me being able to resolve bullying or being effective at resolving bullying, things would be very, very different. I feel I'd be in a much, I don't want to say better, but I'd be in a much different, maybe healthier place. For better or worse, the entirety of my grade school life was spent being ceaselessly bullied and told I could do nothing in return. And that's the harsh truth of it. Anyway, continue on.
Did your parents see this bullying behavior? Like, do they see that? Not saying, yeah, bully behavior, but did your parents know that you were getting picked on in school?
To an extent. It wasn't something, I wouldn't update them every day of, like, every time it happened, but they got updated by the school when things boiled over and I had an emotional outburst, stuff like that. And it would only be then that they'd find out that the bullying had been going on for a long while. And they'd ask the school to, like, hey, can you guys please do something about this? Can you monitor the other students? Like, there were three main guys who were the biggest bullies of my entire school career. And there was always the, like, hey, can you just separate them? Can you move them around? And the school goes, that wasn't very helpful.
So those emotional outbursts, was that due to kids just picking on you?
Yeah. Like,
and what did the school call it? Like, what was their reason why you had emotional outbursts? You're just unstable mental behavior?
The ones that would basically pick up the pieces would attribute it to unstable mental behavior or new meds, or it would be very, very rarely that any of them would recognize this has been going on a long time and this is Dan reacting like any person would. They've had enough of the bullshit and they're saying stop. But the school tried to recognize it as mental instability or inability to deal with emotions, rather than kind of seeing it as, regardless of this kid's mental state, these people are incessantly pressing on him.
Yeah. And in reality, this school robbed you of your childhood.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. It's not something that's fun to think about, but that's the truth of it. I will say this. As much as I absolutely despised the bullying, as much as it made every day hell, I don't know if I would be where I am without that sort of mental haze I was in. If it wasn't for the bullying, if it wasn't for the bullying, but still the medication, I'd probably still be where I am. But acting is a weird career because it's 99% putting in resumes and hearing no. And I theorize, or I feel that, like, if I hadn't had to go through that hard stuff, maybe not as much bullying, but if I hadn't had to go through that experience of having to hear no so often, of having to go through some of the toughest stuff in my life, maybe I wouldn't, if I didn't go through all of that, I would not get used to having to hear no. And the first time I heard no as an actor in that timeline, I'd give up. So like you said, that people who have to go through bullying and go through that, they do tend to come out in a way stronger, or in a way capable of doing bigger and better things. And I guess that's born in part from the resilience that has to be gained from going through that experience, but also the heightened empathy you get from it. Because yeah. I don't know many people who were bullied that in turn have become just the most despicable people. It's usually
I've had a few guests who were bullied, then they became the bully and got the taste of power, and then that was new for them. They loved having that power, and they became jerks, but then eventually they turned their life around.
Well, yeah.
So, but then there's also people who've been bullied and end up, their life is not so good. There's just mental health issues on top of it. They can't escape it.
Sure.
You know, we're one of the lucky people that are able to get, which I also want to contribute. I really think martial arts has a big role into how to combat bullying, not just learning the self-defense aspect of it, but
absolutely.
In martial arts, it's you learn about perseverance and resiliency. You don't learn that in baseball. You don't learn that because in baseball, you know, when you're in high school for baseball sports, there's called a tryout. If you don't make the team, you don't make the team. How does that teach you anything about resiliency or perseverance? It doesn't.
Yeah.
Martial arts, you go at your own pace.
Yeah.
And I had that experience myself. Even though when I joined martial arts, I got picked on big time. I mean, the bullying just increased because now they're trying to get me to quit martial arts.
The weird thing is, while I was in school, and I actually did, I was part of a Shotokan karate school. And I will say that helped immensely. Whether it was technically learning how to fight, but also I was always better at kata than I was at sparring. And that was just the ability to work on and hone yourself through martial arts was honestly one of the few saving graces I'd have during that time.
The school calling you crazy, unstable mental health.
Mm-hmm.
But you're at a martial arts school and you're probably normal.
Oddly enough, yeah.
I'm still trying to figure out your story here a little bit.
Apologies. But
the school saw something. The school saw you totally different than what the martial arts school did. And you were having your emotional breakdowns at school. Did you have them anywhere else? Was it always at school?
It was almost always at school because that's the
why
only.
Why couldn't they put the two to two together?
I wish I knew. Part of it, I feel, is that it was during the 90s, and that was an era where over-medication was rampant, and our understanding of psychological and mental illnesses and all that was just starting to grow past what we saw in horror movies in the 80s. I hit that rough patch in time where people weren't sure what to do, and were still holding on to some old beliefs. And just starting to learn that, well, maybe that's not how it is. Then again, I wish they had seen, like, you know, he only really, like, gets angry and breaks stuff at school. What's happening there? Well, he says he's getting bullied. Wait a minute.
Nah, he's mentally unstable. That's not bullying.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's sadly, that's true today for a lot of kids that I work with.
Yeah.
It's not the school's fault. It's not the bully's fault. It's the kid's just mentally unstable. And it's so unfair.
I agree. When it comes looking back, I have the joy of being alive and be able to look back and see something. And yeah, I could see how a lot of it is a popularity contest, or for some of them, it might have literally been middle school is hell for everybody because everything's changing. And so it's survival for them.
But they
found a group.
And that's still true today, but it shouldn't be that way.
Oh, hands down, it shouldn't. I'm not saying forgive the behavior.
As society, though, that's how we are accepting it. Part of growing up. You know, you're going to get picked on.
True. Ideally, it'd be great if this didn't exist, but it does, and that's why I'm really, really happy you are putting work together to combat it. Because as much as we want to trust, you know, teachers and schools to have the best interests in heart, they're not going to catch everything. They're not going to catch 70% of what happened. So I'm very, very happy that you are making people aware of these things. You're teaching kids ways to deal with the bullying.
Yeah, I'm learning, you can make people aware of it, but as far as getting this culture, the school to change, not going to happen because they don't want to admit that they have a bullying issue. I was in a meeting. I'm not going to say which meeting it was because it'll probably hurt some people that I'm a part of, but the schools can't admit to bullying because it can hurt them financially or whatever. So they use these terms called conflicts, which they are not conflicts because we've discussed conflicts on my show many times. And if you didn't hear that episode, a conflicts were like me and you, Dan, were fighting over a TV remote. Who gets it first? That's a conflict. Bullying is your intent to hurt somebody. But schools don't want to admit it. They don't want to. They're looking out for themselves, put it this way.
Yeah. It's probably a mixture of financial and legal.
And we got some parents who want to, quote unquote, use your voice and be defiant, which doesn't help their situation any better. You got some parents who help their kids out, which is great. Every step of the way, they'll battle with the school. And we got some schools who just have a zero tolerance that if a kid tries to bully somebody, the kids are taught to say, we don't do that here.
It's like people can say anything and it will... Like sometimes it'll stop nothing. We don't do that here. That sucks.
You know, that could be true for that one kid. But if you get, they are number wise, 5 versus 1 saying you can't do that here, there's going to be an impact on that one kid. If it's 1 against 1, you might be able to see that punch coming. But we need to start with these kids at the early age. So Daniel, let's talk about you now, because you were just recently in Obliterated on Netflix.
Right now, Netflix has that tendency to be the one season grinder, but it was still good getting there. And if you got time, got a fun story on how I got to.
Let's talk about that quickly. And let's talk about, not only were you on Netflix, you're on a Super Bowl commercial, which I found. I had a positive video, but the fact that you're in it, not me, it's still a big deal. I mean, you can't take away, you're only in for like a millisecond. While we're doing it, no. So you're in a Super Bowl commercial.
Still. So
how'd you get there?
Yeah.
From a kid being bullied.
How'd I get from a kid being bullied to being in a Super Bowl commercial and on Netflix and in a feature film? When I moved in with became a live-in student for the Kung Fu school, the support of the Kung Fu family and the discipline of actually being part of that system helped me sort of materialize completely as a complete human being. It helped me realize, oh, wow, I actually have self-worth. Wow, I have a lot of hard work ethic. Wow, I'm capable of a lot more than I thought I was. And then from there, I was able to... I got a stable job that I held on to for 3 years, which for old Dan, for before, that was an impossibility. And now I had this job I'd held on to for 3 years. And at the same time, I had found out that where I was living in Colorado had three major film schools or film programs nearby. And so I just, one point, decided, you know, I've always wanted to be an actor. Like, I'd always taken acting classes and improv. I'd always wanted to be an actor, but I hadn't given myself the chance. And so I started auditioning for student films and for small stuff and short films happening around Colorado. And the thing they don't tell you in film, if you're above a certain height, you're a bit harder to cast. And being 6'7", I was far outside that height. But at some point, I was taking a day off, and my sifu comes over to me and says, "Hey, Dan, here you're trying to be an actor. Want to learn how to do stunts?" And he taught me some of the basics of reactions, of fight choreography. And suddenly, when I go to those auditions and say, "I'm an actor and I'm also a stuntman," they're, "A stuntman, you say?" And suddenly those student films and short films wanted to work with me more because they had two in one. They had an actor who was actually doing really, really good, and they had a stunt person who looked phenomenal on film in the same person. And so I kept booking more and more work like that. And eventually, 2019, I started looking into moving to New Mexico. Because Albuquerque has a sensational film program. They actually have, like, Netflix has a studio here. Universal has a studio here. Disney. But after getting a whole lot of work with in Colorado and doing a lot of networking, like, I came to LA from time to time, and I worked with Mike Chad of XMA to, like, train up on more stunts. Got to audition and meet the casting director for Power Rangers. I lucked out and got to work with so many cool people and build up my resume and networking list as best I could before moving here. And I moved to Albuquerque February 2020, just before the lockdowns hit hard. But I got lucky, and there was so many non-union jobs that were needing people that I just got in. And so I kept... Suddenly, my work is bigger. It's not just student films. I'm doing short films. I'm doing background on feature films, on TV shows. And then the biggest one so far is definitely Obliterated, where originally I was brought on as featured. You know, one of the background that you'll see a lot, it was Russian Heavy. And there was one night, it was supposed to be sort of the last night we were filming background guys. And for whatever reason, the wardrobe person wasn't where they were supposed to be, and I was trying to turn in my wardrobe. Yeah. And I decided, you know, I'll just go back to base camp. I go back there, and I see this guy walking across who's obviously got stunt pads on. Like, he looks like he's going to take a fall. And I take a chance and say, "Hey, man, how's it going?" We start chatting. I show him my newest fight reel. And there's this pause, and he goes, "Hold on a second." And just by a chance, the stunt coordinator for that day, Lloyd Bateman, is walking by. And that guy waves him down. "Hey, Lloyd, come over here for a sec." They start talking. And I suddenly feel like maybe they're in business mode. I need to back away. And the guy locks eyes with me, just going, "Don't you move. Lloyd, this is Dan. Dan, show him that thing you showed me." 53 seconds later, Lloyd says, "All right, send me all your information." Couple days later, I'm on set getting shot in the head. And it's been astounding. Because I've been lucky to be able to work almost exclusively as an actor and a stuntman and make so much happen in what feels like such a short amount of time. I only officially decided to go work on acting in 2018. And so it's been 6 years. 6 years from being in student films to being on Netflix.
Because I know we've met in 2021 with Eric the Trainer on his online workouts. And I've been watching you since 2021. I've noticed how fast you're moving up pretty quickly.
Like I said, I got very lucky to... I got support from my Kung Fu family and my Blood family. I found a good place here that the rent was very cheap that I now own somehow. And I was lucky enough to be able to spend my time exclusively working to make myself better, get an agent, get more work. It was rough awesome. During the strike, but been making it happen.
So, Daniel, before you wrap up here, any words of advice for parents who may be dealing with their kids who are being bullied, what they can do to help support them?
So, I know there's a tendency in people's minds to sort of downplay bullying, to attribute it to that's growing up, or like it can't be that bad. And my big thing is listen to them and try to work with them. Because at that point in their life, that is their life. That is their entire experience. So listen to them, find sources much like yours to help them, to help both of you learn how to more successfully deal with bullying. Because I feel what hurt me the most was the school downplayed it. My parents only started to listen during the times when it blew up. And so listen to your kid. Listen to the people getting bullied. Look into ways to combat it. That's my big one.
Daniel, if people want to follow you, how can they do that?
A really easy place to find me is on Instagram as just.another.dan. Or check me out on Facebook. Should be the similar name title.
Daniel, I want to thank you again for coming on my podcast.
Hey, thank you very much for having me. It's been nice.
And for myself, you can always find us at our very own website, which is www.breakingbullying.com. You can also reach out to us at our email address. If you have a story of your own bullying to share, or for whatever reason, you want to get a hold of us, our email address is breakbullyinghere@gmail.com. Now, if you're a victim of bullying and you don't know where to turn, there is online resources to help you. The first is the government's very own anti-bullying website, and the address is www.stopbullying.gov. And other online resource is www.pacer.org/bullying. Now, if you have had thoughts of suicide or of self-harm, we implore you to stop. Reach out to the National Suicide Hotline. That number is very simple. It's 988. I'm Tim Flynn, and thank you for listening, and we will be back next week to continue the conversation to break the silence on bullying.